We both know I was never going to make it to 30, brother. Take care of her. Seeing the promise in his eyes, I feel the urgency of the threat waiting behind the front door and voice as much. Go! I manage through a cough, tasting the blood coating my mouth as I wheeze through the pain. Please!
No!
Cecilia shakes her head furiously, demand in her deep blues.
Sorry, you can't go, Dominic, because I dreamed your future up for you. Hang on, and I'll tell you all about it.
Staring up and into the soul of the woman worth warring over, who gave me a glimpse of heaven on earth, aware of just how much power her love holds, I again curse the fucking fate that allowed it to be taken from me. But just as that thought drifts in, what I thought I'd been robbed of is gifted in the way it always has been, through her. Because it was never about the weather, time, or place. Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Her warmth engulfs me. The atmosphere shifting as tumultuous storm clouds gather in her eyes, and her rain begins to pelt me. All burden lifting, along with any remnants of anger. A bone-deep chill sweeps through my body as the pain abates, and her turbulent blues pierce and hook me, sweeping me away.
Denny. Every unmarked motherfucker in that house is about to die. It's my only thought as Tyler emerges from the trees, Cecilia's blood-soaked clothes in hand. Discarding them, he nods toward me, pulling twin Glocks from his sides as he starts toward the house at a dead run. My gun at the ready, I cover him, and within seconds we've breached the trees at the side of the house near the pool, the roar of gunfire sounding around us. Pop, 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 pop. The rapid fire only fuels me, letting me know it's not too late to join the party, and frankly, I can't fucking wait. So, I don't. Covering Tyler, I shift when a man appears in my peripheral just outside the tree line. It takes a split second before I identify him, my gun already trained on him. Not a bird. Squeezing the trigger, he goes down in a heap. Pop, 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 pop. Most of the gunfire comes from inside the house, a window shattering as we approach, and another figure enters my peripheral. I turn to see Jeremy backing away from the gate, eyes trained as he lifts his gun. Pop, pop, pop. Another down. He turns to me just after and gives me a dip of his chin, expression murderous, but the message is clear. He's got our six. Making my way to the back door, Tyler already inside, I start to tow it open and hear a struggle ensuing on the other side. After rolling in, guns raised, I catch sight of Sean on the kitchen floor, feet ahead. He's straddling one of the Miami crew, bloodlust in his expression as he presses his gun against the fucker's throat in an effort to crush his windpipe. It's no mystery why he wants to prolong his death. He wants him to suffer the way he is, the way we all are. Dom. None of us will ever be the fucking same. Tossing away the threatening grief for when I can allow it in, I fight to stay hyper-focused, scanning the massive double kitchen. Anxiety spikes when I see one of Miami's creeping in from the hall, gun trained on Sean. My fear is quashed when, without looking, Sean lifts his Glock and fires two shots, taking him down. Losing the advantage with the man beneath him, Sean takes a right hook and grits his teeth before turning back and raining down a few death blows before delivering a point-blank shot to his head. Standing, Sean kicks his lifeless body, his thirst nowhere near satiated as his eyes briefly meet mine. What I see in his return gaze is beyond anything I have before. In the next second, Sean disappears from view, no doubt in search of more. Glancing to the other side of the massive double kitchen, I spot Tyler rushing toward an overturned kitchenette, one of the Miami crew barricaded behind it. As Tyler moves in, the asshole frantically fires around him. Tyler stalks toward him, not stopping his footing, even when he's struck by a stray bullet to his vest. Gun lifted, I start to head their way. A second later, Tyler's there, pushing the table back like it weighs shit and cornering the fucker against the wall. Within a blink, Tyler hovers directly above him, unloading both his guns. Pop, 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 pop. Sensing me behind him, Tyler turns, guns trained, but it's his expression that has me retreating a step. God damn. Tyler disappears within a breath as the need to stake my own claim overruns me. A few steps into the corridor that leads from the kitchen to the foyer, I spot one of the Miami crew cowering in a coffee station. Sneaking up behind him, I make my presence known with a tap on his shoulder. The second he turns, I shove my gun into his gaping mouth and fire. The sight of his body hitting the tile floor does nothing to prevent the ache in my chest. He's gone. My closest friend. Fuck. My only friend. Stalking toward the foyer, I see the front door ajar just as a few of the Miami crew slip out. Lifting my gun, I stalk toward them and I hear a bullet expelled from a silencer above, and an unmistakable thunk follows. Pitching forward in a race to get to those out front, I'm stopped by the sight of a falling body before it crashes into the table a few feet in front of me. The man groans as he rolls off and hits the floor. Miami. I move in to finish him off and am stopped with a growl. He's mine. Turning toward the source of the voice, I spot Tobias slowly taking the stairs, dragging the lifeless body he just silenced behind him by the collar. Expression lethal, Tobias's eyes remain fixed on his target, who's now using his forearms to army crawl toward the open front door. Hitting the foot of the stairs, Tobias discards the body, stepping over another to get to the screaming asshole trying to crawl out of the front door. Within two steps, Tobias is crushing what vertebrae the guy has remaining with his shoe. He screams out in agony as Tobias rolls him over before silencing him forever. Pop. They're trying to run, Russell calls from somewhere outside. Tobias's head snaps toward the driveway before he stalks out the door, grabbing a discarded M16 lying on the porch as he goes. Tyler appears at his side in an instant, flanking him. Trailing them both, I walk backward from the house, gun lifted and scanning as more birds emerge from all sides, mimicking my stance. Russell joins me to help me cover them. When we're at a safe enough distance, birds surrounding the house, I turn to see Tobias open firing on the retreating Miami crew scrambling to their cars. Pop, 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 pop. Go, Russell yells to me. Go help him. Running toward them, I catch sight of two cars speeding toward the gate as Tobias gains on the last one, riddling it with bullets. Tyler clears the gate, open firing on the car speeding away. Pop, 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 pop. Tobias's aim pays off when the car crashes into a nearby tree. By the time I make it to him, Tobias is ripping one of the Miami crew out of the car and makes quick work of dropping his gun before breaking his tatted neck with his bare hands. Checking the cabin of the car, I spot one of them coughing up blood, trying to hide in the divide in seats between the two blown airbags and take him out with a single shot. A second later, I hear a scream and look over to see Tyler taking out his grief in a way that nauseates me before he fires. Pop, pop. Just after, an eerie silence blankets the house and surrounding grounds. Long, tense seconds pass. It's over. For now. Get back to the house, Tyler snaps as he passes me, trailing Tobias, who's already halfway there. I silently follow, my eyes scanning the lifeless bodies littering the porch to see if any of them are our own. I'm thankful when I come up empty, but I know the zero count isn't true. Layla's face crosses my mind along with her order to come back to her. And all I can do is thank whatever fate decided I deserved to make it home today, knowing it may not be the same fate tomorrow, for any of us, because a war has just started and we all know it. Prepared or not, it's coming, and that's not the only thing in store for my future. As of last night, Layla gave me even more incentive to return to her, as if she wasn't enough. I'm still reeling about the fact that I'm going to be a father. As the exhilaration of that knowledge flits in, it's overridden by another. He'll never know my son or daughter. Feeling the weight of the loss starts to cripple me, I silently step into the foyer to see birds gathering, one by one from different directions as the rest file in from the porch. Corpses lay scattered around us, blood seeping into the floors, bullet holes littering the walls. It's a fucking bloodbath, but I can only be thankful that most of what's been spilled isn't ours. Russell joins Tyler and me where we stand next to the front door, equally assessing. Sean appears to my right and joins us at the foot of the stairs as Tyler looks over to me. Compound ready. I nod before asking my own question. They broke through one of our borders? He nods in reply. Four birds gone. They didn't have time to send a warning. Any other company coming today? I ask. We think this is all of them for now, but we're going to make fucking sure. He elevates his voice to everyone gathered. No head hits a pillow until we are. I want every fucking bird and their closest at Denny's within the hour. He jerks his chin toward me. No fucking exceptions. Wordless nods and chin dips are all we can convey as we all glance around at the carnage. It's when Russell looks up to the second floor and freezes that I follow his line of sight and still, chest seizing. Tobias stands at the top of the stairs, Dom's lifeless body cradled in his arms, drawing every eye to him before he slowly starts to descend. An anguished mewl erupts from Sean before he hits his knees, palming the top of his head, body bent as if taking cover while his grief echoes around us. One by one, heads start to bow as Tobias draws closer, face twisted in agony, tears spilling from his lifeless eyes. My own eyes spill over as Tyler clips out a hoarse request. Russell, grab your... on it, he says, turning and making a beeline for his car. When Tobias hits the bottom of the stairs, we all step back, giving him a wide berth. Unable to look away, I lift my head just as Tobias passes, staring straight ahead as he walks down the porch steps. It's the sight of Dom's limp hand that has my throat closing as Sean's agonized grunts fill the air. With the slam of Russell's car door, the morning birds begin to sing as if our whole world didn't just fucking stop. My only friend. Tyler. The wind kicks up, the breeze rustling the trees above, creating a calming atmosphere just as the sun peeks out, highlighting the solid white casket before us. The roaring in my chest emanates in unison with the grief of every single one of us gathered, inked arms motionless at their sides. No one speaks. No one wants to. There is no ceremony because our brother would have hated it. We don't need words spoken because I'm certain we're all lost somewhere in time with him. Our individual memories flooding us, a comfort to some, excruciating for others. I'm the latter. Most of us are banged up, bandaged or in physical pain in some form or another due to the battle that started the minute Dom lost his. A fight we all lost, no matter how many of us escaped breathing because the aftermath is fucking excruciating. Our new reality surreal, one in which our magnet no longer exists. Flashes of my brother shudder in. The day we met, our first late night bike ride, sharing our first stolen beer, coughing through our first joint, our high school homeroom theatrics, the shared pains of growing from boys to men. Homing in, I attach myself to a few that stick out. One being the day Sean, Dom, and I stood outside the newly purchased garage, rattling inside with the inkling that we were on the precipice of something bigger, better than the simplicity of our current lives. The wordless looks we shared before we stared up at the building. The satisfaction in Dom's eyes when he fixed his first car. The day he left for Boston, hesitating briefly with his duffel on his shoulder, not turning back to face any of us, the same way I hesitated the day I left to train as a Marine. Because we knew we wouldn't be able to take another step forward if we did. Staring at my brother's grave, I travel through rips in time between us all, and the tie that bound us brought us all back together. Our bond, first and always, before our purpose, reason, and agenda. It's the very thing that made us that feels as though it's breaking us now. In my peripheral, I catch the slow lift of Sean's head and turn to see his watering eyes zeroing in on Tobias, filled with a contempt I never imagined I would witness. Tobias stands on the other side of the coffin, dressed in an immaculate black suit, not a hair out of place, his expression that of a man utterly destroyed. Feeling Sean's gaze, he lifts his eyes to meet his judgment. As they stare across Dom's casket, I feel the true break set in between them, along with the knowledge that they will never be the same. That crippling realization lodges a thick ball in my throat. Next to me, Delphine squeezes my hand, having missed none of it. Needing her, I grip hers just as tightly as Dom's casket starts to lower. It's with that finality that Jeremy bursts where he stands, grunts of pain leaving him as his tears flow freely. With Jeremy's break, grief starts to disperse in spurts throughout the crowd. It's then Tobias visibly fractures from the weight before turning abruptly and stalking toward his Jag. Pressing a kiss to Delphine's temple, I whisper a low, "I'll be."
"Go,"
she whispers, her gaze fixed on Dom's casket as it sinks further into the hallowed ground. I'm 10 steps behind when I snap out Tobias's name in vain, knowing exactly where he's going and to whom. Tobias, I manage, my throat thick. You can't go, I swallow, jogging to catch up with him as he quickens his pace. You know you can't, where is she? He snaps, not sparing a glance back as he pulls his keys from his pocket. You don't want to do this. It will only, he turns on a dime. Where is she? At school, I exhale, exasperated. Within the minute, he's inside his Jag, speeding toward Georgia, toward Cecilia. But even this far gone in his grief, we both know he won't make it past the state line. He'll protect her, even if doing so destroys what's left of him. When his car is out of sight, I turn and start my climb back up the hill and through the gate. The sun disappears beneath a blanket of clouds as the crowd begins to disperse in scattered waves. Delphine remains the only one left, looking so small as she stands isolated at the edge of the grave, eyes cast down. Standing nearby with shovels, the two men at the ready look to me for permission to start, and I jerk my head, refusing to allow her to see it. Her grief and fear are too much of a combination to endure. Or maybe it's mine. It's when I reach her that I see the true toll in her posture, which looks more maternal, like that of a grieving mother, as she stares down at her nephew's grave. Standing idly next to her, it's when the last car starts and begins to pull away that she finally turns to me and allows herself to fall apart in my arms.
Russell. Spotting the kid peeking behind the tree as the last of the soil is padded in, I wait at my car until he starts to approach Dom's grave. He looks to be no more than 12 or 13, but I can see in his posture that he's matured far beyond his age. It becomes even more apparent as I approach and he turns his watchful gaze toward me. His eyes are filled to the brim, a thousand emotions flitting through them. His lip is cut, and there's a yellow bruise beneath one of his eyes. I stand beside him and wait, sensing some familiarity but unable to place who he is. Hey, I say, lining my footing up with his. The kid's chest bounces as he stares down at the fresh soil, and I appraise him. He looks like he hasn't bathed in days or eaten well in months, his skin sickly.
The kid starts. He was the only...
He tries again and fails before deciding to allow his grief through, though he bats away a few of his tears.
He was the only person who ever saw me.
The kid sniffs and falters, face crumbling as though he's lost everything. My eyes burn as I stare down at the dirt and nod. I can relate. For me, Dom was a mentor, a friend, and the only human being who truly saw the struggle going on inside me. He pinpointed it early, talked it out with me when I wanted to, and sat it out with me when I didn't. It was our secret. Getting lost in that thought, the kid speaks up again, his voice filled with utter devastation.
I went to the garage last week, and that guy Peter told me.
He shakes his head.
Never mind. I'm sorry for your loss. I shouldn't be here.
The kid moves toward the gate, and on instinct, I palm his shoulder. He flinches, instantly pulling himself from my grip when it dawns on me. A conversation Dom and I had before he left for France. You, Zach? He nods, eyes widening a little.
He told you about me?
Yeah, he did. I nod. And I can tell you right now, you're exactly where you need to be. A soul-crushing relief covers his face as I nod toward my car. Let's go. Sean.
Alfred Sean Roberts, get your ass back in this house right now.
Mom yells at my back as I race out of the driveway, one of my shoes slipping on my pedal as I call over my shoulder, I'll be right back, Mama.
Now, mister.
Mom hollers after me, and I know she means business. If I get my Sunday school clothes dirty, I'm going to get an ass whooping. I pedal faster, my shoes slowing me down as my dad hollers my name from the porch when I turn the corner. I pretend not to hear him. If I go back now, he might not be there. I saw him when we passed on the way home from church, sitting on the curb. He's always on the curb and never plays. Turning onto his street, I see he's still there, sitting next to his mailbox. He sees me just before I ride up and stands up fast, looking both ways. My shoes slide a little when I put my feet down to stop. Hi. He stares at me as if I didn't talk to him. You want to ride bikes with me? I ask. He just blinks at me. He's got dark hair and skin. My cousin Bradley said his family are fortuners. Where's your bike? I ask, and he doesn't say anything. If you get your bike, we can ride. When he doesn't talk, I try again. Bradley said you were a fortuner. Are you weird? I tilt my head. You don't look weird. He squints at me. Can you hear me? I crashed my bike, he says, squinting harder like I'm stupid. I step off my bike and start rolling it toward him. He's got a t-shirt with a car on it. I like Batman better. You can ride mine, but only for a bit. I have to change out of my Sunday clothes. He jerks his chin and looks back at his house. I can't leave the yard. I tilt my head. You can't ride on your street. I can ride on my street, your street, all over. No. He shakes his head. Why? Where's your mom? I'll ask her. She's dead. Oh, can I ask your dad? He's dead. I kick at a rock. Then who do you live with? Tati, he says, looking at my bike like he wants to ride it. What's a tati? Tati means aunt in French. You're French? That's what fortuner means? You talk a lot, he says, tilting his head. I laugh at him. I talk the same as everyone else. You talk funny. He squints at me again. You can ride mine, but just for a bit. I hold the handles out to him. When he doesn't take them, I sigh. He's hard-headed. Okay, well, I have to go. I turn and walk slowly, knowing Daddy will meet me at the porch and skin my hide. I'll get on, just for a bit. He says it like me. I turn back to see him rushing toward me before taking my bike by the handle. He sits on the seat, puts one foot on the pedal, and waits. Are you scared because you crashed? I'm not scared, he says through his teeth. He's scared. I crashed before too, cut my hand good and bloody. I hold it up for him. He doesn't look mad anymore, but still doesn't push on the pedals. Just push the pedals really fast and hold the bars straight. You can do it. Dom, I hear called from inside his house. Dom! That you? I ask. You Dom? He nods and drops his head. That's my brother, he says as he gets off the bike and holds it out to me. He won't let me ride with strangers. Okay, well, meet me tonight after bed. He jerks his head. He won't let me. Don't tell him, I smile. Oh. His eyes go wide. Okay. It will be our secret. He nods. I point to the streetlight. Meet me over there. I need to get home. I'm going to get an ass whooping for coming to meet you in my church clothes. He throws his head back and laughs. You think that's funny? I smile. That I'm going to get an ass whooping to meet you? He nods again and again, smiling, and I smile too. Okay, Dom. See you after dark. I look back as I push the pedals. I'm Sean. He nods again, still smiling. The front door opens at his house as I turn the corner. Dom, what are you doing? Get out of the street. You were fearlessly flying down that street by midnight, I say, ripping at some of the grass near his headstone, chest roaring as it has been since I saw his lifeless body on Cecilia's bedroom floor nearly 3 months ago. Not that you asked, but I did get an ass whooping just to come and meet the boy who sat on the curb every day. A wave of pain crashes into me as my eyes sting. Best decision I ever made. I won't ever regret it.
Waves of anguish rush through me as I lower my gaze to the definitive dates, the dates that mark the beginning of his life and the end of it. I come here as often as I can to convince myself that this is real, that he's gone. Something inside me refuses to believe it. Our last words weren't at all sentimental in nature or anything memorable, more transactional and out of fear. But he knew. He always knew of my affection for him and vice versa. I used to wonder why people were so worried about last words after someone passes, because the relationship is what matters most. But I get it now. I get it. I would give anything to have those seconds back. But I still have no idea what those words would be. Then and there, I decide there won't be. I'll never stop talking to him. Fuck. I rasp out at the sting of the memory of the day we met. Seeing that kid on the curb, seemingly lost and waiting for anyone or anything to come along. The second time I saw him, I just knew that someone he was waiting for was me. Just as that surety settles over me, the breeze kicks up and the trees rustle above, the foliage floating slowly toward the ground around me. The hinge of the gate squeaks as I focus on a gold leaf as it lands on top of his headstone. You always knew how to help me make sense of things, and you left me here to figure it all out. You did that for me. You always put things into perspective. I need you because I can't make sense of this, brother. No matter how hard I try, I can't understand how you not being here will ever be the way things were supposed to play out. The ball in my throat chokes me silent momentarily as I grunt against it. I'm so fucking lost, Dom. I fist my eyes as the merciless crack ripples through me as it has every single day since he left. How in the hell am I supposed to do this without you? The truth is, I can't. But you're going to make me, aren't you? The breeze blows steadily and I close my eyes in an attempt to gather myself. Face stinging, I take a few deep breaths and inside them somehow conjure an image of a freezing January night. A glimpse of Dom and me a few years after we met, flying down the street on our bikes. The shine on his, which was brand new, as he flew past me, arms raised just as it started to snow. We're flying, he yells, looking back at me, eyes bright, a smile taking up the whole of his face. I'm flying with him. Head tilted up, snowflakes pelting my nose and lips as he whizzes past me, past the streetlight and into the darkness, his high-pitched voice filtering back to me. Come on, Sean! My cell phone vibrates, jarring me out of the most vivid memory I've ever had, and I'm strangled with agony at the loss of it as his voice echoes through time and back to me. Come on, Sean! I'm right behind you. I'm right behind you, Dom. I'm glad that you loved him, and I'm glad he knew what it felt like to be loved by you before he died. And it's because of the way you love Cecilia. Tobias, the finish line. Tyler.
Ne me plaît pas. Promets-moi.
Delphine's whispered plea echoes through me as I stand at the large window in my suite, gaze trailing up the glittering Eiffel Tower to the high beam shooting straight up into the clouds above. Thunder sounds nearby, light rain trickling down the four-squared window pane as the rumble of my phone follows. T. What were his exact instructions? Sighing at the sight of the same message I've gotten a dozen times or more, I type my reply. Working on cracking that top again. T. Always. I swear I relayed every word to you verbatim. T. Humor me and tell me one more time. In a blink, I'm reliving the day I gave the laptop to him. A day I've lived through one too many times.
Wake up, asshole, I snap, pushing through the door, still furious about the hand he dealt Sean and me yesterday when he woke up in the hospital. A moment I prayed for every second since he was gunned down on the street and spent a week in a coma. The upset in his eyes when he realized he survived broke me in a way I can't ever see being repaired. Not after all the loss we've suffered. Sickly, pale, and dressed in a hospital gown, his head lolls in my direction, eyes glazed over. A glaze that hasn't cleared a single fucking day in the last year.
I'm awake.
No, you aren't, but you're about to be. I drop the machine onto his lap, ignoring his pained wince. It's a dick move, but it's the pain churning in my own chest that has me giving zero fucks about my theatrics or his discomfort. It's past time he acknowledges he's not the only one suffering. Sean's refusal to speak a word to him when he woke, though he sat by his side the entire time he was unconscious, had us close to exchanging blows in the hospital parking lot yesterday. I've done nothing but fight for a year and a week since Dom died, trying to salvage what's left of us. A year and a week later, and I'm out of fucking patience. We've lost 25 goddamn birds, I remind him, and I'll be damned if your casket is next to hit the ground. It's time to wake up. Lifting the heavy laptop in his hand, he extends it toward me to take it, and I bat it back down to where it crashes painfully against his chest. He curses but doesn't lash out, and we both know why. His selfish absence has cost us enough.
Tyler, I can't. Just,
his instructions were clear. I don't get to just anything.
Instructions?
He asks, eyes lowering to the sleek machine. Yeah, that, if the worst happens, I was to put it in the right set of hands. Opening the laptop to demonstrate, I press my finger on it and nothing happens. Gripping his finger, I press the pad in the same place and it lights up instantly. I lift my palms. It's obvious that set of hands isn't mine.
I can't.
Tobias chokes out in a plea, his voice tethered from the tubing they removed yesterday that pumped breath into him while Sean and I sat back, terrified he would never draw his own again. When he roused, and the realization set in that he'd survived, it was immediately followed by despair. The truth was made clear. He wanted to die. Anger boils over as I lash out at the memory. Fuck you! His eyes snap to mine in confusion, so I set him straight. You raised soldiers, I pound my chest, and right now you have an army you're not fucking commanding. At this point, we're just as aimless as you've been since we buried him. I can't do this alone. Correction, I won't do this alone, and you're not the only one going through shit. He stares through me. I haven't made a dent. Nothing has. I've lost every fucking thing right along with you, you selfish prick. I see it the second it registers with him. Delphine. I swallow as what strength I have disperses. Aside from watching the woman I love lose her battle to a sickness I couldn't fight for her, my brothers are all walking shells at this point. His eyes slick over with grief as he studies me.
Tyler, I know that if I don't ever get my brothers back, I guess that's one thing, and maybe one day I'll make peace with that.
I relay, choking on the fact that may be the truth. But that's not happening today. So I'm not carrying out another fucking task for this ink until I have the man back who put it there. Wake the fuck up, T. I stalk over to the door. Gripping the long handle, I glance back to see him looking at me. If anything, I've earned his attention. You take for granted the breath in your body while I watched her struggle for every single one. She wanted those breaths because it meant having another day with me. You want to line up with the rest of your family, go right on ahead, but I will not fucking be there to witness it if you don't fight for your own breaths anymore. They deserve better. I deserve better. So if you give a fuck about me at all, wake the fuck up. To my surprise, Tobias texted me back to the hospital the next day. Sadly, my plan to motivate him with Dom's laptop and target list bit me in the ass when Tobias was unable to crack into it. 8 years later, we're no closer than he was the day I delivered it, hoping it would restore his fire and give him a renewed sense of purpose. He's found that purpose and is more determined than ever to see the rest of his mission through. But knowing Tobias, he won't be able to rest until he's made good on the promise he made to Dom years ago. To be fair, we've already seen a lot of those through. If he is watching, I doubt Dom would be disappointed. Tobias's renewed sense of mission has him anxious to get started. One is because of the position we're in with the U.S. government. Two, so at one point, he can claim his newly architected future with Cecilia. I can't blame him at all for the selfish quest to end it prematurely. I had the same selfish need in savoring the seconds with the love of my life. If given the chance, I'd do it all over again, even knowing the outcome. Though I went in knowing it. After years of selfless deprivation, Tobias is wise to that, of how precious a currency time is, and in no way do I disagree that we need to see the last of this through before either of us can hang it up. Our sacrifices are too fucking many, too great. It's our time to reign. This time, with the addition of a queen. Her wings and upgraded status rightfully earned. Even as Dom's plan to overthrow Antoine took a backseat to our war with Miami, the reforming of our organization, the election, and the destruction of loose ends, Julien never forgot. Tasked with the unimaginable, Julien recruited carefully and masterfully, strengthening the birds hidden in Antoine's ranks. Dom's plan hatched just in time for Cecilia to swoop in and set off a chain of events to take Antoine down. In our short stint working together since, Julien has quickly become one of our most trusted assets, surprising us all with his capabilities. Though Dom is irreplaceable, Julien has proven to be worth his weight in fucking gold. We've been maiming those remaining in Antoine's defective army in the months since Cecilia took him down, clearing a path for the next phase. Some of the fuckers Antoine had under his rule were ruthless to the point they in no way wanted to change their ways to suit having wings. And so, we've had to put a few down. Thankfully, through Julien, we've been able to track down the hardest cases. But because we've had to wipe so many of Antoine's thugs from our docket, we've made new enemies, and they're making their presence known. Many of them have become bold in their quest to retaliate. As a precautionary measure, we've moved residences every day for the last week. Tonight, we rented out an entire boutique hotel and have armed French ravens on watch taking sweep shifts on every floor. We also have Secret Service on every block within a quarter mile, added aid from my boss and our current president. We have no plans to go quietly, or, for that matter, at all, especially with the recent drastic increase in the size of our movement. After pulling on a t-shirt, I tuck a gun in the back of my jeans and exit my room, nodding at the two birds standing guard just outside their suite door before knocking. Seconds later, Tobias answers in nothing but his pajama bottoms, his posture wary from another day of cleanup. He opens the door just enough for me to slip in with his whisper, "Cecilia's sleeping." Nodding, I bend to greet Beau, allowing him to sniff my hand before scratching behind his ears. As cute as he is, he's a temperamental, needy little shit who will make a fuss if he's not acknowledged or doesn't get the love he feels he deserves. He is also the second apple of Tobias's eye. Scanning the large suite, I spy the open laptop at the end of a solid oak dining room table that seats a dozen, and make my way toward it. Tobias takes a seat behind the table and types in the first of two passwords. The first password he created was enclosed in the note the day I delivered it. Always brothers. It's the second we've never been able to get past.
"I don't understand why he would make it so fucking hard," Tobias groans.
"Why wouldn't he?" I counter.
"I get that, but it's something I'm supposed to know."
He frowns at the screen.
"Tell me what he said."
"We've gone over this, man. He said to put it in the right set of hands. Your prints are the only ones that fire up this fucking thing." Just as a thought occurs to me, Cecilia speaks up from behind us.
"That's Dom's,"
she whispers hoarsely, and we both turn our heads to see her standing just a few feet away, tightening a long, floor-length silk robe as she stares at the laptop like the fucking ghost it is.
"That's Dom's laptop."
"Did we wake you, Tresor?"
Tobias asks, his eyes roving over her in the way they always do, a way that conveys exactly what she means to him. Life.
"I couldn't sleep,"
she replies before bending to scratch her attention-seeking whore of a dog.
"Today was long."
Understatement. Today was fucking horrific. Cecilia's body count climbed substantially in the months since she and Tobias left Atlanta, her wings spreading and strengthening by the day. The innocence of the girl I met at 18 is long gone and replaced by a fiercely made, forged-by-fire-fucking warrior. "You've seen this?" I ask, nodding toward the laptop. She nods, her eyes traveling over the piece of Dom sitting on the table in front of the three of us.
What's on it?
We don't know, Tressel. That's what we've been trying to figure out for too fucking long.
You can't get in?
She asks, peering at the image on the screen. Santa holding a waving American flag. Tobias grips her hip and looks up at her from where he sits.
Remember when we met, I told you Dom and I were having a lot of problems seeing eye to eye on his extremes.
Cecilia nods as Tobias looks back at the screen, his gaze somewhere in the past.
He was in the midst of building files of incriminating evidence against a lot of the corrupt. Somehow, he's tapped into what no one should be able to. I sent him this laptop to help put his list together.
She palms his shoulder in encouragement as he searches his memory.
I was searching for Abijah, so it was not long after you arrived in Triple Falls.
She nods again, sadness etching her features, concern in her eyes for him. I see it the minute he recognizes it and his eyes soften with devotion. Her focus darts back to the screen.
So, Santa means a list, right?
Right. Tobias nods.
She reads the little square box inside the flag.
And the hint is an enemy?
Yes. We've exacerbated everything we can think of in that respect. We've even called in experts to calculate a list of possibilities, but my fingers have to be the ones to type the answer. There's no way around it, and I haven't exactly had the time to devote.
Tobias, the N stands for natural.
Yes, Tressel, we've considered that, but—
That's what it is. Natural enemy.
Jesus Christ, I utter as I look between them, the inkling growing stronger. They both turn to me, alarmed as the image of Dom scanning his room the night he died, his back to me, shudders in. He wasn't looking. He was thinking. Tobias speaks up first, hope sparking in his eyes.
What?
I'm such a goddamned idiot. I turn to Cecilia. Have you ever typed into Dom's computer? She nods. Do you remember what? I prompt. She shakes her head.
No, it was just a bunch of his codes, letters and numbers.
No, it wasn't. Tyler, Tobias snaps out of patience. Gripping Cecilia's finger, I press it to the newly darkened keyboard and it lights up like Christmas. Tobias's eyes widen in shock as I exhale. He was encrypting your fingerprints and programmed them to this keyboard.
When?
It's all about timing, isn't it? I sigh, shaking my head. Tobias nods, knowing exactly when he encrypted them.
What am I missing?
The night he died, Tobias answers for me. He told Tyler that if anything happened to him, to get the laptop into the right set of hands. The right set of hands? As in two sets of goddamn hands.
Tobias had the first passcode, she had the other, and even if he figured it out, Cecilia had to be the one to type it in.
Do you know the answer, Tressor?
I do.
She replies as we both tense up. She positions herself behind his chair before running her palms up his back along the expanse of his raven tattoo.
He and I had the conversation in passing one day. I'm sure you've guessed 1,000 government-based terms, right?
Right, Tobias nods.
You're thinking of a man's natural enemy.
She bends to whisper in his ear.
What is a raven's natural enemy?
Fingers hovering over the keys, Cecilia types in each letter.
B-A-L-D, E-A-G-L-E,
Bald Eagle. In the next breath, the screen springs to life. A list of files lines up, and one name in particular catches my complete attention as Tobias stares up at Cecilia, incredulous. Seconds of stunned silence ensue as Tobias tries to make sense of it.
It was you, Tressel. He knew.
Cecilia's eyes fill, and I glance over at her.
We had to be together. It was the only way in.
She nods in perfect understanding, a grief-filled tear sliding down her cheek. Elation quickly turns to alarm when I recall my conversation with Dom years ago, the day Cecilia arrived in Triple Falls, and Dom tried to explain what he was dealing with. That bad? I ask.
Worse. These aren't acts of war.
I ready myself mentally for whatever we're about to see as Tobias and Cecilia remain staring at one another, bewildered. Please, man, please. I know this is heavy, but I have to know. After all this time, I have to fucking know. Tobias stares back at the screen, his own fear coming out to play. Tressel.
Don't waste your breath.
She shakes her head adamantly, her eyes relaying enough, and he nods. He's been completely transparent with her since she took Antoine down. But even I have to voice my objection, at least to warn her. Cecilia, this is different. This is something you can never unsee.
I shot 3 men today. Don't fucking preach to me, Jennix.
She snaps, giving us both a pointed look. It would be comical if Tobias and I weren't truly concerned. This is what tortured our brother and had him acting out of pocket up until his death.
Okay, Tressel, but please.
If it's too much, I promise to walk away.
She assures us both before Tobias turns back to the laptop, trepidation littering his profile. Bracing myself, I feel it coming. I know that whatever we're about to discover will irrevocably change the 3 of us as Tobias clicks the first file and a video pops up. Mere minutes later, I have Tobias pinned to the floor, using every bit of my strength as I press my knee into his back while he roars beneath me in a mix of torment and fury. Agonized cries leave him as Cecilia quickly lays on the floor next to him on her stomach, gently calling his name over and over to bring him out of the darkness that engulfed him. Doing what I can, I chime in as he flails physically and mentally. We'll get every single fucking one of them, T. I grit out as he struggles against me. I swear to you, man, we'll get them all. Every single fucking one.
I'm right here, Tobias. Look at me. Please, my love, look at me.
Cecilia begs, her tear-streaked face an inch from his, the horrors we've witnessed reflecting in her eyes. She peers back at him, voice soothing as she palms his jaw.
Tressel, he gasps just as he goes limp beneath me.
Tyler, let him go.
Cecilia whispers, not looking away from him. Unable to think past the second I'm in, I watch them for endless minutes as Cecilia coaxes her king forward in the way only she can. Like everything else, Dom just fucking knew. With the way Dom set this up, there was no other way to task Tobias with a future he couldn't survive without her to fall back on. A plan that was impossible for Tobias to execute without her strength. An undertaking he refused to let him near without Cecilia there to bring him back from the dark places in his mind. Because that was what she did for Dom. Cecilia's always been a reprieve, a safe haven, and had the resilience many of us didn't. It's what none of us could pinpoint inside her because we were the ones who eventually tested it and brought it out of her. Dom figured it out at some point and gave her the position before she earned it. Staring back at the start of the video that set Tobias off, nausea churns in my gut at the memory of each horrific second, but I managed to tamp it down. Our agenda for the foreseeable future is sorted. The idea that Dom shouldered this on his own is too much to fucking bear. We'd all condemned him for his behavior while daily he struggled in his own skin. Knowing that there were monsters like these sick fucks out there doing these things for their own amusement and worse, getting away with it. But like with all things, knowing or suspecting is one thing, but Dom has always known the value of seeing to believe. I stand shaken to my core by the amount of strength and discipline he had to have mustered, even with the way he acted out. Inhuman strength. When our wheels touch down on American soil mere hours later and we're safely in the car, I marvel at my chosen brothers. Both of them. From orphans with absolutely nothing. To the men they became to this moment. I feel a sense of pride for having witnessed such a miraculous transformation, including the revolution of the woman currently at Tobias's side. The difference between the beginning of then to the beginning happening now is mind-boggling. As I study them both in wait for what's about to transpire, Tobias unlocks eyes with Cecilia, swiveling his head in my direction. After hours of disconnect from him, he's back. And there's only one fucking way to discern what's so clearly written in his eyes. The same look that was in his brother's years ago. Vengeance. Tyler. Hearing the strain of my pounding feet on the treadmill of my office, I click the channel and browse through Fleet Media news stations. Click.
12 trafficking hive leaders were found murdered in their homes last month. 30 additional arrests have been made. Authorities have reported that over 6,000 children have been recovered in the last 2 weeks. Click.
The A-list is under cyber attack today, and it's not pretty, folks. New evidence has been circulating the web regarding several studio moguls, pop singers, producers, acclaimed actors, and even sports giants taking part in a disturbing ritual. Warning, the brief clip you're about to see is not at all recommended for sensitive and younger viewers.
Click. This just in. Two military officials were discovered today, having been gunned down in their homes. Investigators at the scene reported looping video footage on every screen of the officials' houses, including incriminating correspondence between the two officers. The two men were under investigation nearly a decade ago when charges were brought against them due to the discovery of a rerouted shipment of military-grade guns, one of which was found in the hands of Joshua Brown, the 20-year-old who was shot dead outside of a North Carolina auditorium on the 4th of July. Next to Joshua's body was a duffel bag filled with military-grade guns and ammunition, along with printed online correspondence of his plans for a mass shooting to take place later that day. Though the second suspected gunman was never found, shell casings of the same weapons were discovered during a North Carolina crime spree, which led to the arrest of both military officials. Both officials were charged but found not guilty due to insufficient evidence. But in light of investigators' new findings, click.
In the last 2 months, numerous reports have been flooding the airwaves in what officials, government agencies, and media alike have deemed the most methodical retribution plot in U.S. history. The common ties to each, substantial and indisputable evidence, which has perplexed authorities. Many reports have labeled this movement the smoking gun. The FBI, CIA, DEA, and other government agencies are baffled by the surge of vile acts and crimes that have been brought to light, but have not been able to identify a single suspect in connection to this phenomenal string of vigilante justice. The suspects, who took it upon themselves to act as investigators in addition to judge, jury, and executioner, still remain at large. These eye-opening events have since set off a chain reaction around the country, and many have come forth in aiding these vigilantes.
Clicking off the TV, I slow the treadmill to cool down before walking a full minute in silence, his words echoing through me.
You would think at least one of you would understand my struggle.
My chest cracks in recollection as I absorb the domino effect Dom set into motion a year before he died. Though satisfied with our progress since we left France, it's as though not an ounce of the weight has left me. It's no big surprise why. I memorized every detail Dom left us, along with his methodical plans to both expose and dispose of the trash. It's the amount of planning that remains the most disturbing. The painstaking detail in which he laid it all out. The amount of time he spent with this in his head. Alone. Utterly alone in it all. Feeling the burn in my chest and making peace with the fact that I may never know peace again, I make my way to the shower. Minutes later, I wrap a towel around my waist as I pick through more than a dozen suits, expertly tailored to fit the president's right-hand man. Today, I'm not him, and I won't be until my task list is complete. Mine is much longer than everyone else's, not out of spite, but because Dom knew what position I would be in at some point. Exhaustion tries to sneak its way in, but a little over 2 years into Monroe's first term, I marvel at the fact that Dom's next gift will help us exterminate enough in D.C. to win Monroe his next election. As invisible as Preston's ink might be, he's a raven through and through. Allowing the day to settle in, I remember my brother for who he was and what he hid. His secrets were always kept with the purpose of being our gateway. He didn't just shield us from the burden of knowing. He was biding his time for all of us so that, piece by piece, we got everything we needed to press forward and do it in the most impactful way. I'm convinced now he felt his imminent death on those stairs all those years ago, and no doubt started preparing in the year before he left us. Whether he knew it or not, he knew enough and mapped our start. Plucking a suit from my closet, I walk inside my bedroom as my cell rings. Jennings. Mr. Jennings, your car is here? Thank you. I'll be right down. Walking out of the hotel 10 minutes later, I'm met by the sight of my temporary driver as his lips quirk up, eyes dancing with mirth. Clint holds the door open, his driver's uniform laughable as he greets me. Good morning, Mr. Jennings. Cut the bullshit, I clip, my own lips lifting at the sight of him, looking whole and healthy compared to the night I drove him into an unknown future. Today's the big day, huh? Clint asks. Yeah. So let's not keep him waiting. Yes, sir, he says, smirking as he closes the door and gets in the driver's seat. 20 minutes later, we pull up to the airport and wait. Heard the news, Clint says, while my eyes frantically search the terminal for any sign of him. Yeah? I say as we share a smile in the rearview. It's unbelievable, man, what you guys have accomplished, he says with nothing but admiration in his voice. By someone else's design, I say, straightening my sleeve beneath my shirt jacket as Dom's words strike me again. When we wait for someone to do something, no one ever fucking shows up. Just as his words reach me, Zach appears outside the terminal, civvies on, his hair only an inch thicker than when I picked him up from graduating basic. He cracks a smile a mile wide when I step out of the car, and I head in his direction. Neither of us breaks our stride as we embrace, my heart alight as we hold on a little tighter than the norm, and his whisper hits my ear. Hey, Dad. Chest roaring with the sound of it, I clamp his broad shoulders and pull back slightly, eyes roaming over him. You look good. Feel good, he says as Clint relieves him of his duffel, tossing it in the back of the SUV. You ready? I ask. Been ready, he reminds me. We've had a few arguments about when he would get inked, but we always agreed this day would come. What better place to commemorate the occasion than the place where it all began? 3 hours later, the three of us stand graveside as I scan the headstones lined up just past the iron gate, one belonging to my first and only love, and the other my chosen brother. The two of them were so alike in so many ways that it was uncanny, ways I never pointed out, but they were both aware of. Both of them were intuitive and fueled by their hearts, but those hearts were often stunted by their brilliant mind and need for independence. Impenetrable until they weren't, and once you got in, you were made to feel it. I experienced the love of both those hearts, and it was incredible. We all stare for a few beats at the headstone that reads, Prince Deschu. 3 generations of birds paying homage to the man who irrevocably changed each of our lives for the better, who gave us purpose and made us part of the most valuable thing that continues to survive his death. His legacy. Allowing the ache to have its way with me, I watch as Clint steps forward. He pulls his latest annual sobriety chip from his pocket before bending down to Dom's grave, his words drifting back to Zach and me. I wanted you to have this one. He pushes the chip into the ground in front of the gravestone. You saved my life, brother, in more ways than one. Thank you. He slowly stands and lingers briefly before turning to Zach and me, palming my shoulder as Zach steps forward. Plastic wrapped around his fresh ink, he kneels, no longer resembling the gangly boy we collectively took in and sheltered, and brushes some of the debris from the weathering headstone. I. His voice wavers slightly, and I understand every shake inside it. It's been a long, hard road for both of us. Zach became a permanent part of my life at the worst imaginable time, at the brink of war and while Delphine was losing her battle with cancer. His father hadn't bothered looking for him, and I had to pin the fucker down and get persuasive for him to sign for the adoption. Even as my own hand trembled a little while finalizing the papers, I knew it was the best decision I would ever make. He became my son legally at 15, now a man, a fourth-generation Marine, and a Raven. I've never been more in awe of how things work out. You were right, Zach tells Dom. I'm nothing like him. Dad says I'm a lot like you, and all I can say to that is, I fucking hope so. He runs a hand along the top of the stone. You gave me a family, and for that I can't thank you enough, Dom. We'll be back. Zach stands and looks over at me with a reverent glaze in his eyes. I return his stare, hoping he sees the pride shining in mine as the burn keeps me mute. Zack reads my expression and gestures toward Clint.
Let's give him a minute.
Zack and Clint both nod and take off through the gate and down the hill. Taking my time, I allow the memories to flood me, emotions churning as I stare at the etched date of the days I lost them. It feels just like yesterday, then again, a lifetime ago. His words kick back to me as I stare down at his weathering stone.
When we wait for someone to do something, no one ever fucking shows up.
I always believed you, I whisper as every hair on my body stands on end.
You were the someone who did something. Still are.
I choke around the burn in my throat.
I hope you're seeing this, brother.
Dom.
Don't you dare leave me here. I want that date with you.
Cecilia demands tearfully, roping me back to her as the past, present, and future collide and intermingle. Within the next heartbeat, I'm blinded by another flash of light and pulled back through. Whoosh, whoosh. Anger and resentment between two fighting brothers who refuse to turn their backs on the other. A ceaseless war. Love lost and found.
I'm right behind you, Dom.
A battered heart pushing a ring on a new love's finger. More grief as a presence brushes against me.
I see you found our back door, nephew.
A hospital door.
Wake the fuck up, T.
A faithless man healed by a fatherless son. An intake of a baby's first breath.
I told you I'd give you my firstborn, but I gave him your name instead.
Another crack of a baby's first cry, echoed by another and another. Flags waving as millions gather with renewed hope.
We're waking up ghosts, Rye.
A lost love retrieved on a cobblestone street.
I wish you would have taken me with you, but I guess, in a way, you took us all with you.
A burst of music, a paintbrush dipped in red, a distant bark.
Healing?
Je suis désolé, je suis vraiment désolé.
Fireflies.
The coronation of a queen. Unification. More presences brushing against me, our governing view the same. The click of pool balls. Endless laughter. Boundless love. A solid beam of light piercing into a cloud-filled sky. A long-awaited reckoning followed by an awakening. Vengeance. Revelation.
You were the someone who did something. Still are. I hope you're seeing this, brother.
Endless dawns and sunrises. Foamy waves rolling toward cliff rock as clouds gather above a turbulent sea.
We did it, brother.
Life given and life taken away, and every moment in between. I live it all, with them, through them, as them. Whoosh.
If you leave, we will be brothers wherever you go, right, Maman?
Whoosh. Tobias presses his forehead to mine as I relay through stunted breaths that there is no separation. One last secret to take with me. Frère, pour toujours. Whoosh. Cecilia's storm engulfs me fully, sweeping me into the blissful state only she could ever take me, as my brother's whisper reaches me.
Mother greet you. Father keep you. I love you, brother. Whoosh.
It's time to sleep,
petit prince. Whoosh. Whoosh.
This is the end of One Last Rainy Day, The Legacy of a Prince, Book One of the Ravenhood Legacy. But keep listening after the credits for a special note from the author. This has been a Podium Audio production. If you enjoyed this audiobook, we would love for you to rate and review it. For more contemporary dark romance, check us out at podiumaudio.com and sign up for our newsletter. We promise we won't spam you. Also, consider joining our community of listeners, fans, and trolls on social media. We're active on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, and Reddit. We'd love to connect. You have been listening to One Last Rainy Day, The Legacy of a Prince, Book One of the Ravenhood Legacy, produced by Troy Odie, written by Kate Stewart, performed by Joe Arden and Maxine Mitchell, members of SAG-AFTRA. Text copyright 2023 by Kate Stewart. Production copyright 2023 by Podium Audio. All rights reserved.
Dear reader. Hey, you. Was that ending a little out there? For me, it felt fitting. But let me preface my reason for it with a little explanation of where it stemmed from. You know that woman that Dom mentions in the 80s who flatlined 3 times and was brought back with a vivid recollection of the afterlife? That was my mother. Every detail of her description of the afterlife came directly from her memory of the brief time she swore and faithfully believed she visited. Due to the substantial injuries she sustained in that horrific car accident, she was considered medically dead for a long period. However, the doctors refused to give up on her because she had 3 young daughters, 2 of whom were in the car accident with her. I was one of them. I gained consciousness in the middle of that highway on that sunny day and saw the cloudy sky hovering above before a medic popped into view. My first question was, "Is this heaven?" All I remember was his smile, but I can't at all recall his reply. Ironically, during that time, it was my mother who was taking that brief journey. After coming back, she learned to walk, talk, read, and write again. Once she could, the first thing she expressed was that she was not at all happy about being brought back. My mother lived another 30 or so years before cancer took her back. Every minute I spent with her leading up to her passing, she never seemed afraid. Maybe she was trying to protect me, but honestly, she wasn't that selfless, which convinced me she was looking forward to her return trip. Since that accident, she's always remained firm in her testament that an afterlife exists, and it's better than we could ever imagine. For someone like me who fears the inevitable, it brings me some comfort. Not to mention, her description seems pretty sublime, like a place I wouldn't mind going. That said, I hope you'll forgive my what-if indulgence, as we truly have no idea what's waiting because it's a secret none of us will ever be privy to and can only faithfully believe in until we discover it for ourselves. But if such a place truly exists, I can't wait to see you all there and feel that unimaginable love, compassion, empathy, and forgiveness we seem to be abundantly lacking. Despite that, there's still so much good left worth fighting for, and some ones are still abundant, living every single day as a testament of that. I'm forever grateful for those people, and this book is my way of acknowledging them. If you took the time to read any part of this, I thank you from the bottom to the top of my heart. All my love, Kate.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.